All right, gang, we got another podcasty doodle, and this one's going to be featuring birdsong because we are outside and I am currently rewiring the stereo in this truck. We bought another Suburban.
Woo!
This one's a 2003, so that's not quite as new as my 2004, but I'm feeling like a pretty fancy guy with my
2003, 2004 Suburban Fleet.
I still think they're new, and it's like, what, 15 years old now?
Oh, God, is it 2020? What the hell just happened?
Oh, it's like 16 years old. Anyway.
Yeah.
We had some discussion about what, so the 1990, we had a 99 laying around. We bought the 2000.
I would say it served its purposes that we had it for.
I fought the 99 for a while, but the 99 won. So then I got the 2004 when it was supposed to be time to get Sue's, like, a car.
Mm-hmm.
So she drove the 2004 Suburban around for work because she works, like, 2 miles from the house. So it didn't really matter. It's like, we're not desperate for gas efficiency because it's so little of a trip.
Right.
And we really, when we errand with a bunch of equipment and stuff usually, so it's just better to have the capacity. So we were weighing out what to get for a second vehicle. We thought maybe like a Tahoe or something so that I could keep the motors in the same family.
Yep. And
well,
then,
not even family, same motor.
Yeah, know? Same motor effectively. And then at one point we even debated a Silverado because you were like, a locked truck bed would be kind of cool.
Yeah, if we did like a hard tonneau or like a cabin or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I just finally, May sat down and went, why don't we just buy a second Suburban?
It's all that we needed, but just times two.
It's not a bad idea because you gotta understand the math on this. Let's say that you buy a used Suburban for like $4,000 and you put $2,000 more into it and you're up at six.
Mm-hmm.
And then you buy a second one of those and you're up at 12 now, which
yep.
is in the long run where we are. Although that didn't all happen at once. I wish I could just do that. To go and get a new one, if you had cash on you with a four-wheel drive and on whatever, like the package we got, it'd probably be, what, like $50,000, $60,000?
Like, probably, if it were brand new in today's market, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I saved some cash. Like, it's all paid out straight, you know. What I can't do, I send to the mechanic. What I can do, I do myself. And having two in the same, honestly, two in the same car means I know what I'm doing much more often.
Yeah, and if there's parts issues or whatever, it's you've got the other car for comparison.
Yeah, come the apocalypse, I can just pull parts off one, I guess.
Yeah, okay, you're trying to plan for that. That's
yeah,
good.
I mean, I don't.
Some
there
water.
Won't be any fuel, but you know.
No, we'll worry about that. We'll power by dog.
Yeah, just dog powered Suburbans.
Be fine.
For whatever reason, yeah, I just Anyway, so the long story short is I have the second Suburban, and now that I have two of them, I'm going to start gearing them slightly different. One of them is going to be road tires, all ready for the highway long distance, like when we went out to Wyoming.
Yep.
And then the other one is going to be more of an under 10-hour range.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be for the nice short mid-range travel. Yeah, they basically both need to be able to handle some difference in terrain.
Right, but so the problem is, honestly, one's going to be southeast and the rest is going to be the rest of the United States. Because particularly the southeast, we get clay mud.
Oh, yeah, we get like that soupy, moopy mud.
Yeah, and even the regular Suburban was having a little bit of a fit playing in the mud over at the IV-88 chute.
Mm-hmm.
So, in my mind, one's going to have 50-50s. It's going to be, they both have the Z71 package, so they have four-wheel drive, they have slightly better suspensions. So both of them could get themselves out of trouble, but one's going to have road tires, the other's going to have 50-50s.
Yes.
One's going to have a hanging spare for, you know, it's a full-size hanging spare, but it's a spare, and it's just for getting to the next point on the highway.
Right.
The other's going to have a full-size 50-50 spare on a swing out. And this is long-term planning. I can't do all this at once, but in the long term, I'd like to have one that's a little bit more self-recoverable.
Yeah.
And the other one I can call AAA on.
That's fair. So we tried to plan for that, and I think we've done a good job. We
yeah.
got a decent deal. We've got two cars running now back from the mechanic. I'd say we fared out well with that.
Yeah, for like a quarter or less of what it would cost to just have one new one.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm really careful. I get that I work, and therefore it's in my money, but it's also like you guys are the ones paying for the show. So it's your money.
So you're just trying to be careful with it.
I try to be, like, anything that goes above my living expenses, I try to be cautious about how I spend it because it's a responsibility to the community that's backing this project.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it feels weird to say I have to buy, like, I do have to buy a large truck thing to carry equipment around safely and guns and whatever else. So how do I do that affordably, I guess, is how we got to this position.
Yeah, I'd say we did it good.
So, and then reliably, because yes, that's reliably. The other thing. So the reason we need two of the damn things is...
if one ever goes down.
Yeah, it's just the other one's right there. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the Villa Perosa is a good example of this. We had to go... We had a 24-hour window in which to shoot that gun.
Yep.
So there was no time for it to mess up. If the car had gone down, yes, I could rent one. Yes, I could do X, Y, and Z. But when I rent one, that car is not kitted the way my car is. It doesn't have our equipment already stashed and ready to go or whatever. It throws us off our game. Mm-hmm. And when we get thrown off our game, we make mistakes. So the game is to make everything as repeatable as possible. The car configured exactly the same way every time. The equipment is in the car that's in the car, you know?
Yes.
The equipment that goes in the box is in the box. The box... We have a massive box that will only fit in, like, a Suburban. I don't even know if we could fit it in a Tahoe.
We could try, but I think it would fail.
Yeah. So, like, if I rent a car that can't fit the whole box, well, then we have to break up the box, and we don't know where our equipment is, and we start losing stuff. It's... Everything about this show has been designed to be repeatable. Sorry, it's starting to rain. So, that's the short answer, is, like, how do you inexpensively make it so that you're on a template? And then, what else have we done recently? So I'm working on this car. Ooh, it's starting to rain.
So you've been working on the car. This past few weeks, you've been working on Madsen episodes?
Yes. There is a correction for the Madsen episode that I need to make note of. There will be another animation file coming out for the Madsen episode in the near future. It depends on Rob's availability. He's the one who does our animations for Machine Guns, VBBSMYT.
Yes.
We license from him for Machine Guns because there's no way on our two-week rotation we could get all that done.
No, there'd be too much on Bruno on top of everything else that he does.
So we tend to tell him about the Machine Guns that we've either already filmed outside or we're coming up on, and that gives him months to work on it.
Yep.
And then he was going to donate their use, but... People are always better motivated when there's a paycheck involved.
Also, on top of that, if we ever wanted him to do something, he knows from us that we are guaranteed when it comes to making sure he definitely gets paid for any extra work that would be asked of him.
Right. This is already his hobby, and he wants to do it. But for us to pick what he does next instead of him picking what he does next, I think we should pay for that.
Absolutely. Know? I agree.
So
plus, he does a good job. He works hard.
Yeah. I mean, if we had the money, I would love to be able to, like, really pay and just be like, hey man, you want to do this as a retirement gig, you know? Mm-hmm. Whenever we grow the show, I try to, like, pass that money to talent that is willing to contribute, because I don't know, it's weird. I'm at the nexus. I don't see myself as the end of the patron funds. I see myself as the nexus of the patron funds, and I have to assign them where they're going to do the most good for the viewer.
Yep. So be it we need vehicle for travel so that we can continue to do what we do, or we need more animations, or we need different equipment, or we're looking to try something out. We need to be able to allocate those funds appropriately.
The funds as they come in, it's basically like they go towards stability. And once stability and repeatability are met, you then apply them to opportunity. So gear, you basically load them like a spring so that something, again, like the Villa Perosa comes up and you can just pull the pin on that and that thing will launch. Mm-hmm. And you can get that done. And then those funds are blown and you restack that spring and you get it ready for the next time you can do it. And it's not just money too, it's also my schedule, like trying to be ahead or behind or whatever. You have to gauge when you can launch that spring.
Yeah.
And then... when those two things are done, or when they're accounted for, so you have the base finances covered, you have the spring loaded for if something happens, you leave that in reserve, and then also, like, I keep a fund on the side specific to auctions, because there's a couple pieces that nobody has loaned us yet, and I'm willing to spend on them if I have to get them into episodes. Now, I didn't just sit there and pull a huge chunk of change. I just slowly add a little, like, a savings account to it, and that becomes a CNRSL auction fund. And thankfully, we haven't had to use it very often, but occasionally something comes in cheap enough or available enough, and
like with the Star.
Yeah. And then, well, also, we saved up enough in that fund that I skimmed some of it off to buy some of the early shotguns, because we're looking at the shotgun series, because those are so cheap that it was like, okay, well, this is easier than shipping them back. And some of them are cheaper to buy than they would be to ship and insure both ways. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like, well, let's just go ahead and have some stuff on hand. So,
I agree. Good call.
So I guess that's the hierarchy, though, is like stability, opportunity, and then after all that is improvement. So then improvement would be, okay, we have this many funds in past our stability point, we can hire an animator. And then we did that. And then we had enough funds past our stability point that we could hire you.
So and we did that.
And you can see the show improved every time we did that because I had more hours available to put elsewhere. Maze brought her own imagination to a lot of things that's not my imagination, and that's improved the show. Like, there's been a lot of that. And so we're coasting on that again. Like, we haven't had that much financial growth, but in terms of
schedule. No, we had a giant growth there in January.
We did. We had a big, well, the problem is, though, we had a big increase in January.
Yep.
It makes me nervous because already like $100 of it fell away after the novelty wore off. So I have to be careful. Like, I want to, there's the money that you can put your weight on and there's the money that you put aside. And so as soon as I know where we can put our weight on our cash, I'm going to figure out what to do with that. At the moment, I'm using it to clean up house debts and stuff. Like, We ran pretty hard to get where we are for Project Lightning and other stuff, and I got a little mess to clean up, which is the second vehicle thing. Like, we didn't have two reliable vehicles. We had one sort of reliable vehicle. So this is pretty critical to be where we are.
Yeah, it's kind of important to have a roof that doesn't leak.
No, the insurance is covering some of it.
That's true.
So,
But yeah, so you had that, ultimately, the beginning of all that was that you had Rob, he takes care of the animations for the machine guns for us to give right. Bruno the break.
Oh yeah, because we were supposed to be talking about the Manson.
Yeah.
So the short answer is, I struggled to find what was going on with the German Madsens. I didn't have one in front of me. There's a partial one at Springfield. And I asked around, and I didn't get a lot of feedback. Most of what I saw were World War II ones. So I was talking to Rob, because it turns out when I went to lay in the animation, he animated a different Madsen, which is why the animation is so chopped up, because his fired from the open bolt. Well, his animation fired from the open bolt, but then he said to me, well, actually, I observed this one Madsen, but my diagrams I found were for this other Madsen, so I did what I could. So he ended up kind of making a hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
Although 99% of it is a World War II style Madsen. And I had to chop up the animations that I showed what transferred between the 1905 pattern, which was really the solidified pattern, and then minor modifications from there. But he actually shared with me the photos of the guns that he actually observed. And the gun that he observed was a milled out German example. He had not seen my sort of general community call to tell me anything that you have on these milled Madsens. So I went, oh my God, you have all these detailed internal photos of exactly the gun I was asking for 2 weeks ago. And I had already filmed all the episode. It's all already down. And to be fair, what I found out is still, it just points me in the direction I had already sort of said in that episode,
mm-hmm.
but I can't prove it yet. And I need to walk it down even further. It's really hard, man. I get one solid week to do my research and writing for every episode. Because think about it, it's 2 weeks between episodes. If I add more days than 1 week into research on one gun, it comes out of another gun.
And then, like, not only that, but on top of that, you kind of have to already do some sort of pre-research beforehand, so you know what books that you're going to need for when you actually have that week of dedicated,
right,
hardcore research on one thing.
So I have to know a little bit about a gun in order to get ready to do the hard research, and I have to just gather raw data, and then I get 1 week to pump it down. And that was a few weeks ago. And then I get a little bit of a cleanup period, but the Madsen required a big cleanup period, and there's just no way. We'll never get it done. And it needs someone to sit down and do real research on it, is what it really needs. And, you know, my buddy Folke's done some good work on it, Nielsen's done some good work on it, but they've done it from very specific, like, Dutch or Norwegian perspectives,
mm-hmm.
Or Danish perspective. Like, I've seen all three of those explored, because those were hard adopters of the gun. But nobody's done the German version yet. I think I might be the first to really weigh in on it, because the Germans did so much to obscure their use of it that it's not like someone who's a big German researcher would really touch it. It was a minor part of their armament. If somebody's a big Danish researcher, those records probably are burned.
Yeah, at this point.
Because the trail as I see it currently is the Danish rifle syndicate probably got a contract for 500 Brazilian guns that was canceled after they entered production. I don't know how many were finished. However, this came, the contract came in 1912. The production probably happened in 1913. We know this only because the contract for Brazil is mentioned in the negotiations with Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And Norway has their own records. So thanks to Folke, I know Norway had to hold up a little bit because the Brazilian production was started. And then from Brazilian production, they went to the Norwegian production. So if you look at a Norwegian model 1914, it is internally almost identical to this example that Rob found, which is the German scrubbed version.
Pretty
cool. However, if you look at the markings on a Norwegian 1914, they exist on the Danish rifle syndicate is marked on the right side, mm-hmm. in a little band. And on the left side of the receiver, there's a center spaced set of model numbers and Norwegian markings. And they sort of form, if you were to try to get them all in a bubble, you could do it with a big circle. On the German guns, that DRS marking on the right has been ground off in exactly that position. Internally, they're identical, except for the chambering.
Mm-hmm.
And then the left side, where those Norwegian marks would be, there is a circle ground out. But that circle is smaller than the necessary circle to actually cover all the Norwegian markings.
Ooh.
So my thought is the Brazilian pattern probably were marked in the same way. The manufacturer on the right side, the Brazilian markings on the left, because we see that for later Brazilian guns, Portuguese guns, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's probably a Brazilian crest where that roundel was. The problem is I have not found a single Brazilian model 1912, 1913, whatever they would call it. I can't find one anywhere. So chances are Brazil never got any of their guns and released them into the market, and then they got smuggled into Germany like we talked about in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
So did Bulgaria buy all those, like the one story? Did Germany smuggle them out like the other story? Like what happened? Unfortunately, it's a lot of he said, she said, and I have zero paperwork in my hand that I have seen that proves this, and I hate that. I like to have hard memos.
Hard memos, hard orders.
Right. But that is my leaning. My leaning is that it was overruns for Brazil and 7x57 that were converted. However, I did find out that the German guns were in 7.92 for sure. They definitely are a near match to the Norwegian 1914 pattern.
Pretty
Norwegian,
cool.
Norwegian 1914 pattern, internally, very minor differences between it and our 1905 that we showed.
Mm-hmm.
The release lever on the left-hand side doesn't poke up past the feed port.
Okay.
The interrupter lever is scrunched a little bit further forward and comes up a little taller.
So is the hump bigger then?
Yeah, it's got a little bit more hump as far as I can tell.
Okay.
And I'm looking at pictures in a book. And the hold open is not a separate rectangle milled into the block, but rather it's part of that channel that guides. They went ahead they realized, like, why do we have a second hole for this? We can just let it grab where the guide channel is for the interrupter.
Cool.
And that's it. So in terms of having the right gun for the episode, we have the right gun for the episode.
Nice.
It's just ever so slightly different for the German. And I don't know where we would find a German one that we could fire, because I don't know of any of those in private hands. So I think we did a good job with the Madsen episode.
I'm pretty happy with that. I'm really happy Klaus was willing to let us have it for this long and even had it to begin with.
Yeah, that's a fantastic. I still haven't figured out exactly what contract his was. And given its low number, it might not have even been a contract. It really could have just been made and shipped out. Or it could have been, to be honest with you, his could have been one of the ones that they were trying to get the Brazilians to buy.
Mm-hmm.
Because his is not branded anybody. So I suspect it was just a generic commercial model that was put out there. So it was probably sold either to an individual or sold sort of as a pre-testing piece or something. You know,
pretty cool.
So it's pretty wild. Now, what else were we talking about?
So, did you want to mention at all any new shows that might be in the works that you've been kind of starting to be secretive about, secretly opening your lips a little bit?
Not yet.
Little whispers?
No.
Okay, no whispers yet.
There is a show, the Shotgun Show is stalled currently. We're waiting on two models. If we want to do an international version, we're waiting on two models.
The reason why is because we're trying to, again, do this in chronological order.
Right.
So the plan is still to hopefully do this this year. We are waiting on two models. If, worst case, those two models don't show up again, we've told you before, we'll just go forward with it.
So what's going to happen is there's a couple ways this can go. We're waiting on one model in order for it to be a chronological U.S. history.
Mm-hmm.
We're waiting on two models for a chronological world history.
Right.
And then there's like two or three models out there that are extremely so rare that if we miss them, we miss them. They were never really sold more than 100 units anyway. But the stuff that was actually available, I would like to cover.
Fair.
And there's just a couple pieces that have not done well over the course of history, and yet they were very available at the time they were available. So I need to track them down.
But aside from that, there's some other show that you have been working on that we will keep under wraps a little bit longer.
This one, we had an idea. It's been kicking around. It was too complicated, so we came up with a simplified version, and then I had two volunteers step forward to actually star in it, so that you and I don't have to do the show.
Mm-hmm.
We would help set it up, and then it would run itself.
And I'm fairly confident in their ability to perform on camera. They, in real life, they have fantastic personalities.
Right. So there is a consideration. Imagine, if you will, a CN Arsenal extremely light version of Primer dedicated to terrible guns. That's the loosest I can tell you right now. Please don't get hype, but be a little hype.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. What else is in the news?
Sue's got a new guinea pig.
Okay, yeah. There's three guinea pigs in the house now.
She's very happy about it. It's settled the other two. They don't...
This was a calculated decision.
This was a calculated decision. Effectively, Crozier and Lewis have had some issues in the past with each other. Originally, we got Lewis because Crozier obviously needed a friend, and that's a thing with guinea pigs.
You're not supposed to have a lonely guinea pig.
Yeah, you're not supposed to have just a single guinea pig. You're supposed to have two because they are pack animals. It's better for them, both emotionally and... Well, no, just emotionally. It's just better for them. They need a support pig. So we got Lewis as Crozier's support pig, and unfortunately, they just never really clicked as friends. They didn't pair bond or anything. They kind of just tolerated each other, I guess is the best way to think about
it.
Or not. Yeah, they also just would battle rattle each other occasionally.
So the Sioux found out that if you have that problem, sometimes a third guinea pig actually helps, mm-hmm. because they become a bigger pack, and it's not that sort of one-on-one mentality.
Yep, so it was either going to get better or it was going to get worse.
No, I don't think it's supposed to. I think the consensus was... They'll either fight just as much as they used to, or they'll stop. So it's
okay,
like,
so is that going to be the same?
It's fairly low risk to get a third, apparently.
That's fair. Okay. So yeah, there was a decision to be made there, and she found a younger guinea pig that she ended up going with, and it was talked about how possibly that could even be a better choice.
He also has a weird inverted bowl cut. He looks like does anybody know Japanese mythology with the
the
turtle?
Kappa?
Yeah, the turtle creatures with the bowl in their head that has the water.
Uh-huh.
He's got a cowlick, so he has a bowl in his head.
He has a constant hat. He's just constant terrible haircut.
Yeah.
It's great. But his name is Hugo.
Yeah. She named him after Schmeiser.
Yep. And Hugo has been doing, sorry about that, Bing. Hugo has been doing very well. He has relaxed the other pigs, I would argue. And they all seem much more content.
No, I haven't heard any, like, battle rattle in there.
I've heard occasionally, but honestly, he's doing a very good job of mellowing the other two out. They're so entertained and they're so relaxed now that it's actually quite nice. Yeah. They seem happier.
So that's the new guinea pig update.
Yeah, that's pretty good. she's very happy, they're very happy, and occasionally we have guinea pig circus once a week. That's when we put them all on the floor and they have fun.
Hmm. With a towel down.
First. Yeah, with a towel down in a fenced-in area.
Lot.
Yeah, they do poop a lot. Anyway. Yeah, what else is new? So we're still on going to shows.
Oh, yeah, we're going to the show of shows. Did I put that in the update?
I think you did. Yes, you did mention it in the update. But for patrons, yes, we are definitely going to be there. At the very least, Othias is
definitely going to be there. Yeah, I would love to do, like, something to meet people.
Mm-hmm.
I can't.
Nope.
We're doing the dumbest way of doing this, which is that... Because other people have normal jobs and want to go, it's like 5 or 6 o'clock is the first we can get out on Friday.
We're going with a group, if that explains that. So effectively, Othias is like, hey, I'm going to go. And then we had a bunch of friends be like, oh, yeah, we all want to go too. So what, we've got like 8 people going?
It's a mess. So, well, no, we got more than that, because then I think Kevin's meeting us up there too.
Oh, shoot. Well, he's not riding with us, but effectively, we're taking a caravan. The CN Arsenal caravan is making its way up to the shows.
Our buddy
year.
Matt. From
I love Matt.
Firearms Policy Coalition was going to meet us. But
freaking
then
crazy popcorn eating.
He has to
eating.
Be in Bama, so.
What?
I don't know, but if you're in Bama and you're not going to shows, you better go hang out with Matt on,
he
I think, like, Thursday.
He was supposed to come and stay on our couch. He's not going to do that now?
He's just going to come up some other time. He wants to go Friday night with Doc anyway.
Oh, he does want to do Friday night dinner.
So, we're going to have a handful of people running around.
Yeah, but basically since we have to wait for what normal people have normal jobs to get off their work or be ready, we are effectively leaving Friday night.
It's like and a 10-hour drive.
We will just drive into the show of shows that morning on Saturday.
Yeah, no hotel. No. Just drive, show up at the show.
I mean, we have a hotel for Saturday night.
Well, we'll shift drive, so you get a little bit of a nap in the car, but God knows, you never really nap in the car.
Yeah, no.
And then, so, we've done this so many times now, like when we drove out to Wyoming.
Honestly, a 10-hour drive sounds nice compared to everything else we've ever done.
May and I are monsters, because we'll drive like 6, 7, 8 hours each while the other one sleeps.
Well, we did Wyoming in 2 days.
Yeah.
That was dumb. That was dumb. Don't do that. Don't be like us. We were dumb.
Yeah. We put the tent on the car and then barely used it because we were like, why pull over? We could drive while the other one sleeps.
Yeah, it was great. And then it was terrible. But then it was great again because we like totally saved time. Anyway, so yeah, we're going. We'll be there Saturday, Sunday. If you see us wandering around, feel free to, you know, say hi. We'll chat with people. But yeah, we tried scheduling meetups with even friends and fellow gun toters that we know of to meet there, and everyone's going at different times, so that's already been hectic as it is.
Yeah, the other problem is just making the time. Like, yes, if I could get off 2 days earlier and go up by myself and just be there for 2 days to hang out, that'd
you'd
be great.
You'd have fun.
Yeah, but I don't
you'd
know
buy
that I
buy unnecessary
do that.
Things, probably. But
I guess I could theoretically, if I could get my damn bike running.
Yeah, you could ride your bike up, and then I could just drive.
Yeah, but you'd have to bring a trailer or something. Well, I guess I could bike back by myself.
Yeah, you'd have to bike back by yourself. I know, that's, he loves going places in his bike, but you just gotta take a different route back. You're not at least going through Kansas this time.
No, but I'd have to stop. Well, I got a friend in Knoxville that I could visit. I could bike up and sleep in Knoxville and then bike out.
There's also KOAs.
That's a good halfway point.
Yeah. Anyway, entertain that idea at the very least for your own sanity.
Well, it's also cold out.
Oh, shoot, it's cold out.
And if it gets wet out, that's not fun.
Also, we haven't really planned this far ahead. No,
I say that like I haven't crossed Kansas in freezing
rain.
We're
not heading off on episode stuff yet. We don't even have the next script going yet.
Yeah. Oh, there will be a Q&A episode.
Yes. Oh, that's right. Good thing.
Because we're running out of time to do all these things, and so we're gonna roll a Q&A as a filler for a moment, and also to clear the deck. We got a bunch of questions piling up.
Yep. So what we'll do is we'll not only ask you to give us some questions right now, but also on top of that, we're gonna put a Patreon notice up saying, hey patrons, give us your questions so we can answer them for that release.
Yep. And then we have the worst handgun of the war coming.
Oh, yes, we do. It was the worst handgun ever so far.
Yeah, can't tell you
and
about
I
it.
And I say that having shot that Reich's revolver.
Yeah, this is the worst handgun in World War I and soon to be an episode.
Yep.
Unequivocally.
Yep.
So that'll be fun.
That'll be interesting.
What else do we have for notes on there?
The last thing I really have noted that we could talk about was trying to get in touch with gun groups.
Oh, my God. What
so
is
this
going
has
on?
Been the bane of your existence for
well,
the
this
past
is two
like,
things. So,
few years.
I don't have the time, and yet
you try to make the time, yeah. You'll email, you'll call.
I want to be two people so bad, but the truth is I want to be more involved.
I don't know if the world could handle two of you.
Well, you know, Eric's been getting more involved.
Is Eric your second half? Is that what you're saying? Because I just said the world couldn't handle two of you, and you just compared your second half to Eric.
No, I don't know I'm the same as Eric, but I'm kind of redneck. I like Eric. But, you know, Eric over on IB8's been getting more active. And we're not politically active as a show. But as a person, I'm fairly politically active. Like, I have my opinions. I won't bore you guys with them. But the thing is, I want to get involved in two fronts in my own state. The one you guys will care more about is I want to get involved in our state-level collectors organization. I'm partially, like, I got a little toe in the water with Virginia's Collectors Association, but they got a lot going
you.
On right now.
Yeah.
I think I was offered an honorary from them, like, to be a non-Virginia member, which aww, I will probably take up, but I didn't want to accept anything until I had time to actually do something for them. You know what I mean? Like, to just join an organization and just have people, like, applaud you and not do anything for that organization, I can't do it. Like,
I know.
I can't do this Meritus thing, because it's just like, I need to contribute if I'm going to... Being a part of an organization means contributing.
Well, I mean, to be fair, they may also be thinking that they want to be associated with you because they see you as a high integrity show. Like, they see the product that you're putting out, and maybe they also just want to be associated with you because that's a good status with them.
I mean, I can appreciate that, but I would rather do something for them.
I tried, guys. I really did.
So, you know, I can't just take free stuff. I cannot do free stuff.
Unless you give him a sandwich. If you give him a pre-done sandwich.
No, because if you give me the sandwich, I will find something nice to do. I can't do it. It's this tit for tat. All the tats. I don't have any tats, but that's because I gave them all out.
Oh, so, okay. Yeah.
Right. anyway, so I was thinking about it, though, and I was just like, I like my own state, too, and I want to be involved. I'm right here. It's easier for me to be involved here. You
true.
Know? And I go to all the shows anyway, and I was approached by the director, and he was just like, yeah, there's some stuff that we could use help with, blah, 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 blah. And so I did that thing where I start thinking about it, and I was trying to imagine, and I have no idea if this is going to be appreciated or not, because sometimes people want you to help them build something, and sometimes people just want free advertising.
Yeah, so they want you to build it for them.
No, I don't know if they want it built for them even, because I've definitely been in situations in which I said, you know, you could really do this. And then they go, ooh, that would be nice. And I will put it together. I have put things together for people, and they get them and go, I wanted my stink on it. And you go, oh, well, put your, I don't care. I don't need credit. And they're just like, but it's not my stink. It's got stink like me. And then you're like, okay, well, now you know how to do it. Go do it. And they're just like, eh, because they actually aren't that productive of people. Now, I'm not saying this is SCACA, by the way. This is not what I'm saying. That was an example of definitely failed businesses of previous years.
Mm-hmm.
But what you do get a lot of, especially with older generations, I've found, is they become aware of the fact that you are well-known, and they want, in their mind, their biggest problem is outreach. And so they're looking for what I would deem to be advertisement. And since that's what they grew up with, that's how they think you reach people. And you try to explain to them that it's actually more of a, nowadays, it's all about relationship building. It's about what we're doing now. We're having an honest conversation about how the show runs.
Mm-hmm.
So that our patrons feel like they have, you know, some connection to what's being done more directly than just like, hey, give us your money, bye.
You know? They have some connection to it. And then on top of that, they also have a better understanding of what things will be going, what their money will be going towards going forward.
Yeah, and also if you know how the work's being done, you know why it costs money and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So I'm talking to SCACA. I haven't had a chance to sit down in front of anybody yet because of my schedule at this point. But I'm trying to hook them up. I've been talking to Virginia's collectors organization because they do a very good job, and I was trying to get some of their opinions. But the short answer is I kind of came up with these four pillars of what I think the modern collectors organization should be. And I do believe that all 50 states should have a collectors organization.
Mm-hmm.
I think collectors organizations at a state level are a really good thing. I don't think they need to be nationalized. I don't think it needs to be. I think having this a state-sized one is the right size. And then I greatly love the way Virginia does their business so far. But I was thinking, and I was talking to them, I was talking to South Carolina, and I realized four pillars. And I'm trying to go off my memory, so hold on, I gotta do this right. There's community, novelty, education, and economy. I think those are the four pillars for a good gun collectors organization. Not a gun rights organization, that's a separate topic for a moment. Mm-hmm. But just, I like old guns, you like old guns, we have gun shows, we go to meetings, whatever we do. These things are what you're looking for. You're looking for a community to plug into. You're looking for, everybody's looking for novelty, which is the idea of something new or being exposed to something you didn't know, you know?
Or in a different way.
And then more proactive than novelty is education, which is to get the, not just to be exposed to something entertaining, but to be exposed to something that you can then learn about. And that they have the resources to help you learn about it. So other members, maybe a library, maybe researchers that they can connect you to, whatever it may be. I think that education section is a very powerful one for keeping people in that sort of organization. And then the fourth one is kind of first and last in a way, is economy. Your price of admission to the organization must make sense for what you're getting out of it. And especially if you can tie that organization to local businesses with discounts or anything like that, that's also great. but people tend to think in terms of economy. The big ones right on the surface are community and economy. Those are the two that people recognize of any organization. But specific to a gun collecting organization, I think novelty and education.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been trying to pitch ideas based on those four pillars and try to hit as many of them as possible with the ideas for as low as effort or money as possible. I was not aware of how small most state level collectors organizations
are. Yeah, I think you told me that was really something that super surprised you.
They're hovering around like 500 for a lot of them. Like, not a lot. Like, they're actually very small. They tend to be, these organizations tend to be very small, but run gun shows that have door tickets, and the door tickets pay for the gun show itself.
I mean, to be honest, I do see a lot of people standing in line for door tickets, but yeah, I guess most people just don't want to have to deal with a yearly fee.
Right. Well, the other thing is that goes to the economy. So in South Carolina, if you remember the South Carolina Association, if you only go to the gun shows that happen in your town, then there's no reason to, because you get free admission. That's what I'm missing to say here.
Mm-hmm.
You get free admission to the shows if you're a member. Well, if you're a member, the annual membership is cheaper than the cost to get into all the gun shows by a good bit.
For your whole state.
For the whole state.
Yeah.
But if you don't want to drive from 3 hours this way and 3 hours that way to get up and down the state, and you only want to go to the ones in your town, well, then it's more expensive to have a membership.
Yeah, technically it's more expensive.
And so if you see that the only value in that organization is the free admission, then the economics,
and you don't travel,
right,
then, yeah.
The economics go off, right? Now, they may have a lot of members that do travel the state, and therefore the economics are good right at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But how those people feel about community, how do they feel about, you know, novelty, how do they feel about education? And don't downplay it, but those are hard to build. Building a community is very difficult. We've seen this in our Discord. That's a whole...
Oh, wow. That was a whole... We had just now, with this whole new Discord one, like, that's actually a really fascinating one, how long it took you to actually build it to what it is now.
Yeah, I mean, it's still not big.
No, it's still not big, but at least the community is much better. It's way healthier.
Well, the thing I've found is, if you try to stabilize a community and try to make it a healthy community, there are agents that will disrupt you at every turn.
They're feral.
No, they're not even trying to. They're actually decent people who just see any boundary as a problem and don't understand that when you create those boundaries for a little community, not for, you know, I'm more libertarian in my mindset about, like, legality, but in terms of a private club, there are people who will fight you to have sort of the most laissez-faire environment possible, but if it's a completely laissez-faire environment in a private club, what are you there for? You might as well just go to a public park, you know, because it's supposed to be in context. Like, the whole reason to have this little capsule is for it to be contextualized. And so it's interesting, like, community building is very difficult, and especially when you're dealing with people who, the big challenge for all the collectors groups, they tell me, is younger people.
And it's the same issue museums were having, the younger crowd.
Well, and it's interesting, I get this told this all the time, and yet most of our support is coming from people under 30.
Yeah. Like, that's our majority demographics are either low 30s to early 20s.
Yeah. We get a ton of young people watching, and it's because we're on their medium.
Yeah.
That's the big answer. We go to them. And I've been trying to explain this to a lot of guys that are much older, and I'm just like, well, you have to go to them. And they're just like, well, they need to come to us. And it's just like, you want them. They don't want you. You want that. You want the young blood. You want the next generation. You're an employee. Imagine you're an employer and you're trying to lure in the best possible employees. Do you just sit there and just yell, come work here? Or do you go out to trade shows and other places where you might find workers and recruit them?
Well, I mean, look at things like it's not a museum or at the SACA, but look at Rock Island Auction House, where they have an Instagram account that they post on frequently. Ian was at their most recent auction that they had, or are still currently having, I think.
Yeah.
And they were posting like crazy, videos, pictures of other guns and stuff. Like, they were promoting themselves on Instagram, YouTube. Like, they were everywhere with it, which was fantastic for them.
Oh, it's been great. And then also look at Morphe's now, because John over there has been kind of kicking dust.
Oh, yeah. And he's been doing an awesome job.
He's got, John, if they should give him the reins, because he has the best strategy. like, and I don't want to give everything away, but John's focus is the next wave of collectors are going to own fewer guns overall, but they're going to prize the guns they have higher because they don't have the, even if they had the same income as the boomer generation, which they don't, but even if they did have that income, the guns are not as affordable as they used to be. So even it's like the guns are more expensive and the incomes are lower. The next wave of machine gun collectors in particular are going to own, you're not going to have as many mega collection machine guns.
Nope. It's going to be small portions.
It used to be, you know, you have doctors and lawyers or whatever who have 20, 30 machine guns. Now you're going to have a handful of guys that have 100 because they're millionaires.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, I shouldn't even say millionaires. That's not even
multi.
That, yeah. You're going to have like very high dollar guys, very interested in this, that have a lot. But they're still only going to have one of each. They're not going to go crazy on six of the same thing. That's the other thing is, it used to be, since things were more affordable, you could get six guns of the same type much more commonly. It's mm-hmm. far less common to have people buying multiples of the same gun in the younger generations.
No.
They go buffet style.
Or they'll want to complete the set. Like, you'll see them trying to complete a set of something.
Right. And another strong contender now is that there are a lot of guns that were easily bought because they were Lithuanian or Ethiopian or whatever, and then they became rare because they were Lithuanian or Ethiopian, and they became highly valued because it was like hard to get that as your final country or whatever, you know, it was like that hard, that rare piece for your mm-hmm. set. But that whole market's being blown out by one even more severe, which is cultural identity, which is a lot more people of different backgrounds are entering the gun collecting market. And they're like, well, my family's Lithuanian and I want a Lithuanian Mauser. And I'm going to spend $10,000 because it's the only gun I want. Mm-hmm. And I'm putting it on the mantle as part of my history. And people get real personal about that. So there's a lot of changes in the market that people don't really think about. And so if you're going to be a collector's organization, and you want to connect with those people, you're going to have to actually connect with the younger audience, and you can't do that by inviting them to a gun show and having a bunch of old guys yell at them.
It doesn't really work. Yeah. I'm just gonna say it doesn't work at all.
So I was trying to think about it, but I think something happened. So SCACA is talking to me and they're saying, you know, we want to get these guys in, and don't go yell at someone because they have a board, they have a director, they have a vice president, they have all these guys. So there's lots of hands in here, and the left hand doesn't always know what the right hand's doing. But here's what happens, and I thought this is a microcosm of it, okay? I'm told we want more outreach for younger people. We need younger people in these doors. I'm afraid of aging out and dying out, and the gun shows go away, and there's no collectors association, or it's completely crippled, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I hear that, I look through their newsletter, I look through everything else, I'm trying to figure out, like, what can you do to appeal? And I'm going to be honest, thank God no one under 30-something would read the newsletter. Because I was reading the newsletter going, if I was 25 and you made me read this, you'd never see me show up. Because, in particular, there's one spot where they were talking about rules, which everybody under 30 hates anyway. But in the rules section, it's one of these things where it's like, do not handle a firearm unless you are highly likely to buy it.
What?
Yeah, and I've never even had that attitude. By the way, that attitude is not prevalent at the shows.
No, it's totally not prevalent. Well, you've had like one or two modern dudes there do that to you, but for the most part, 99% of them aren't like that.
No, so what it is one of the curmudgeons that's in there, which I've never seen that attitude at the show, really. One of the curmudgeons slipped that into the newsletter. And you're just like, if this is how you represent yourself, like, hey, if you're coming in here and you're not buying, get the fuck out. No.
No. That's weird.
Why is this a collector show? That sounds like you're describing a regular old gun show, not a gun collector show.
Yeah.
So I was alarmed to see that, like, right there in black and white. And I was just like, this is going to be a major attitude problem that needs to be fixed if you want to lure in the youngers. And I know what's going to happen to some degree is I may get 10, 15% of the guys to go with me to be like, nope, we do need to do something. The situation is dire and we recognize that. But I'm going to tell you the majority are not going to want change.
Oh, no. And they aren't going to see it as a required change either, because why not? Their ticket sales on the average are still okay. This isn't really that big of a deal.
Well, maybe.
I don't know. No, that's what it's going to, that's what it's going to become.
Some of those guys, I don't think they care about ticket sales or whatever. I don't think, I'm not talking about the decision makers necessarily. I have no idea what their opinions are. I haven't sat down with them. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about just membership. Like, if you tell membership, we're going to start targeting, you know, 25-year-olds, like, the first thing they're going to do is wince. Because all they see it as is, like, a cultural invasion. And yet, they probably started when they were 25. Things were different or whatever else it is. So
there's a big relational gap there.
I think the biggest challenge for collectors groups, honestly, they're going to have to get proactive. They're going to have to find people who are willing to create media to put it out there online.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have a newsletter that actually has an article or two in it about something that somebody was studying that they decided to read up on. Like, you're going to have to create something of value. So, like, I'm signed up for, on a national level, I'm signed up for Winchester and Remington Collectors Associations. And I only did that because I found out they were putting out quarterly magazines or whatever the case may be. They were putting out magazines.
Oh, yeah, you love getting those.
That have articles in them by people who are doing legitimate research. And I'm very curious about what they're writing about.
I would agree.
Like, I was reading the Remington one the other day. It turns out my buddy Austin Ellis was in there, and I didn't even know it. He never told me. And I was just like, this is a great article. I'm glad I would have missed it if I hadn't signed up for this. So, you know, I honestly think collectors groups could have a lot of good influence. It's just, I don't think they're geared. The other thing is, I don't think a lot of collectors groups recognize certain things as being collectible or not. I think a lot of,
That's fair.
They'll probably never see, a lot of these guys will never see an AK as being collectible. Even if it comes from this country or that country or whatever. Because to them, it's just a rebuilt whatever. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It's pretty tricky.
It's a hard place to be in, but it's something that needs to change.
On the plus side, at least I'm exchanging emails and trying to figure it out. But
yeah, that's true. They are reaching out. They're trying to think of ideas themselves as well.
Well, I floated a bunch of ideas. I haven't been told no on any of them. I haven't been told yes on any. I haven't been really acknowledged on any of them. It's more like, yeah, when am I going to see you next? And it's just like, oh, boy. Like, if it relies on face-to-face to get anything done, it's never going to work. And that's sort of the symptom and the cure. Like, it's interesting where it's just like, you know, the fact that you need me to be in person with you to make a call is probably why you're not able to communicate to the younger generation, because they don't need to be in person for anything. You know? Mm-mm. So, yeah, it's pretty wild.
Yeah.
Now, on the state rights level, and again, not a political podcast or anything, I have tried to make contact with the two largest that I'm aware of, pro-2A movements in South Carolina. One of them I went through their contact form, nothing. I went through their email, nothing. So I sent a Facebook message. I have to go check my Facebook and see if I got anything back on that. But, like, I gave it a week on each, and, they're not answering their emails.
That's good.
Yep, that's a real good start.
Good start, yep.
So that was, I think, Palmetto Gun Rights.
Mm-hmm.
And then South Carolina Carry is the other one I know of. And they got back to me right away through email. But then I've had a heck of a time setting up a meeting to just get in front of somebody. So now I'm doing the old man thing. I was like, well, I want to get in front of somebody and get some stuff cleared up, because their website's a bit scattered and dated. And I'm really not getting any good information off their website. Like, I'm sure they think it's great because it's just like, here's how you sign up. Sign up. But really, in terms of showing signs of life, like active life,
it looks like the website's basically been stagnant for 20 years.
Well, no, because it's like you go to the news article. I want to say this is it. I think I'm thinking the right one. You go to the news articles and it's like stuff from 2017, 2018. And you're like,
oh.
Yeah. And what it is somebody stopped updating it.
Yeah.
But that's not a good sign. Like,
nope.
You want to see signs of life, you know?
If you go on a site and you see that there isn't anything new updated in 2 years, you don't really bother with it.
They have a member forum, but it's behind a paywall. So that's pointless. That's going to be a ghost town no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm not seeing any signs of life, except for the more traditional route. I do have somebody willing to email me. I was supposed to get dinner with them tonight, but it got canceled. So, and that's the other thing is I'm trying to kind of, I'm playing a scheduling game that is not easy to play, just to try to get in front of someone so I can get an explanation. This is a really poor way. So anybody, the questions I have are questions anybody would have, and I'm not getting the answers from the website, and I'm having to go in person to get them. I have the same questions for Palmetto Gun Rights, and I'm getting a few more of them from their website, but not much, like, not by a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They're much more verbose on their website, but it's also a little distracting because I'm a little less clear. Like, I'm like, I have this explanation, but I don't really understand it. And so I want to get in front of them, so I sent them an email, and I have no response. So one of them's a little more upfront, but no response, and the other one's much more responsive, but I don't know what the heck's going on.
Not the best for either.
No. And I don't know if any of them are tied in on a political level, like, to any actual representatives in the state, which is probably not a good standing.
That's not good that that's not on their website.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, neither of them have any endorsed candidates that I found. Like, I can't...
It's kind of weird.
Yeah. And I've looked at other parties like Libertarianism or Republicans or whatever else in the state. Like,
mm-hmm.
I've looked at what the other parties are doing. Much, even like on the Libertarian front, it's still better organized. And you know what it's like to organize Libertarians. I mean, Jesus. Like,
herding cats.
What do you do to organize a group of people who refuse to sign up for alerts of any sort? Like,
you need some catnip.
Am I allowed to email you about, no. Well, then how will you participate? No. Okay, welcome to Libertarian. Like, it's great. But, yeah, it's just one of those things where I've been trying to kind of compare, and I don't know what, I don't want to go mess with the Virginia Defense League right now, because they've probably got a lot on their plate, but I imagine they're probably better organized than we are in South Carolina.
Probably.
And that makes me very nervous about, you know, how quickly
things could turn here, yeah.
And regardless of the politics, like, personally, I'm nervous for my politics, but secondarily, you know, some of the stuff that's passed in Virginia that's going through now would affect our ability to produce the show here.
Yep.
Like, deeply. Can you imagine if I could only transfer... Weren't they trying to do, like, one handgun a month?
Yeah, one handgun a month.
So how would I...
You wouldn't be able to stock up for the show, because there are times where you've bought several in a month.
When I easily. Bought, because... Well, so the
well, not bought, is, like, transferred
they
in.
They don't
sorry,
track
wrong
it as a
phrasing.
Buy. They track it as... They say buy... But they track it as a transfer. So what happens when somebody sends me a case full of 6 handguns to work through for the next 6 months?
Because that's totally happened.
Yes. So what happens then? Like, do I have to wait 1 month for each one to come out of Hawk? Who's storing them? Are they storing them correctly? You know.
And then some of those have been for a singular episode. So it's like you have to wait 3 months to do one episode sometimes.
Yeah.
That'd be cool, right? Totally producible.
I mean, there's just unintended consequences. And so then it's like, well, you'd have to do an FFL. And it's like, okay, so if I do my own FFL, then everything goes public, which means I must get a commercial property or expose myself to having people show up at my home. Because yeah. You can just search us, you know what I mean?
And seeing as how I have had some unfriendly stalker in the past.
Oh, my God. Yeah, we've had some choice characters that I don't want to know our address. So, yeah, it's tricky because we're not, I don't know, it's a huge mess.
Yeah.
So I am getting interested in getting involved. You won't hear it on Primer, though. Again, the only time you will hear a video announcement on any legal situation
is if it directly impacts
right.
our
so
show.
If I found out we had a handgun limit coming, you might hear me say, like, a quick video and be like, hey, guys, South Carolina has this bill in hand. I cannot tell you how to vote. However, if this goes through, just know that this will have X amount of effect on us because of Y reason. That's all. By all means, if you feel like debating in the comments, I'm staying out of it. But just so you know, this would affect the show. It may make things more problematic.
That's as political as you'll get on a Primer, pretty
right.
much.
And that's all I want to do. And the reason I do that is because it is news to the show. My ability to produce the show, like, I communicate patron, I communicate fundraisers, I communicate how successful they were.
Mm-hmm.
I communicate, you know, if we're in trouble, if we're doing fine. Like, I try to put all that stuff out there for the viewer. So something like that, I can come out and do a news announcement. But otherwise, I want to stay the heck out of politics, and not because I don't think they're important, but because, to be frank with you, people are getting politics everywhere they go.
It's oversaturating every media source at this point.
I really hope for a lot of people that CNRSL is an oasis.
I'd like it to be.
Yeah. So unless it's a clatter of sort of semi-emergency or emergency, you're not going to hear me saying anything.
So guys, please enjoy the old guns, the shooting, and all the talky bits.
Yeah. So here's what you can do if you're listening to this and now we're winding it up. If you want to talk about positive or negative experiences that you have had with a collector's group, I would highly appreciate those comments on the Patreon or Subscribestar comments, because that's where these get listed.
Oh, okay.
You could also, I guess, leave them on the YouTube-y bit, but I'm going to try to get this over to an MP3 file, so there may not be a comment section with the audio file.
Fair.
So when you get a second, if you're listening in your car or something later, head on over to Patreon or Subscribestar, however you're signed up, and give me some comments on how well or poorly it has gone with the collector's group that you're associated
Feedback
with.
Feedback on that would be appreciated, just so that if there's anything that really stands out, we can always pass it along and hopefully help benefit our own
right.
associations that we go with.
Yeah, if we can crack them. I don't know. Everything's up in the air, but I'm really curious about how these systems get built and maintained.
It'd be nice to hear some positive things that have come from some of the shows.
I also have a vague fantasy of starting like a newsletter of my own. Like
that's true.
Like a collector's newsletter, but like a really vintagey looking one with like letters from people to the editor.
We've
got
to get Kevin to contribute. I want Black Cotta Kevin with that so bad.
It'd be so fun to have an editor. Like if I could somehow, I should probably try to like do an Indiegogo to launch something like that.
That wouldn't be a bad idea.
If you could pay enough to hire an editor so that it could just run and then I could just contribute to it periodically. I wouldn't even need the money for it. I just think it'd be funny to launch something like that. All right. Well, that's it, guys.
Yep, pretty much.
Thanks for all the support.
Thank you, guys.
Have a good one.
Bye.